If you have kids, kids watch TV shows. What do theme songs on kids' shows sound like these days? Something like...
There's 104 days of summer vacation, and school comes along just to end it.
So I personally have nothing wrong with Phineas and Ferb.
Right?
Yeah, no, love it.
There it goes. All right, kids, time to watch the show. All right.
Just a lot of energy.
But there was a time when you'd watch a child's children's show, you'd watch it, and it would start like this.
Aww.
Calling kids like butterflies to the TV screen. Or maybe the fact they didn't have to pay royalties for the music. We'll find out a little bit about that with Mike Leshefsky. He and his wife Janice have written the book Cleveland TV Tales. Mike, does this bring back memories to you?
Oh, boy, does it ever. The Clear Fountain, La Claire Fontaine. That's Barnaby's theme song. That's a great one.
It's amazing how it's changed. And I was thinking, Captain Kangaroo also had one of those light, airy kind of puffin kind of thing theme songs.
Yeah,
then.
As a matter of fact, the captain actually took that on his show on the road one day to the Hollywood Bowl, and he had the Hollywood Symphony actually play that behind him. It was amazing.
Wow. Well, we're having you this morning because you've put together Cleveland TV Tales. What made you decide to get all the... I know there's been different books. Barnaby wrote a book about his life, different people like that. What made you decide to kind of... I want to kind of share what I loved as a child with everybody else.
Well, I think you said it right there. And, you know, another thing is, so often, mass media and mass communications are disposable. They're there, you turn off the TV, and it's gone. These were the people that shaped our lives, especially in the 50s and 60s and even into the mid-70s. These were the people that really taught us important life lessons, and we don't want them to be forgotten. You know, I teach at a number of universities, and I'll ask some of my students, who knows who Tarzan is? And they'll all put up their hands. I'll say, who wrote Tarzan? And all of a sudden, out come the phones, and you see the thumbs going, to find out who Rice Burroughs. I don't want any of the folks that we grew up with, like Lynn Sheldon, Ron Penfound, Dorothy Fuldheim, the list goes on and on, to be forgotten, because they really helped shape our lives in so many important ways.
And it also kind of shows the way the local television, Cleveland in particular, sort of exposed us to that, yet the public, we embrace them. We embrace our TV heroes in a way.
Oh, we won't let them go, I'll tell you what. You know, it's funny, one of the stories in the book, and we got this from Matt Penfound, who's Ron Penfound's son, and it was backed up by Lynn Sheldon, who said he remembered it like it was yesterday. For a brief time, Lynn Sheldon and Captain Penny were on the same station, Channel 5. They needed somebody to replace Uncle Leslie, which was the sort of hobo clown that Lynn Sheldon played. So Lynn said, that kid with the big voice from Elyria, give him a chance. And it was Ron Penfound. Well, they wanted to sell Lionel Trains because that was a big sponsor with a guy named Engineer Bill on the West Coast. So they said, all right, well, you're going to be an engineer. He took the name Penny from Penfound, obviously. It was a family nickname. And before he went on, he says, oh, gosh, I'm Penny. What am I? Engineer Penny doesn't sound right. So he says, wait a minute, I'll call myself Captain Penny. So he goes on the air, does the whole little, kids so stick there. And Lynn Sheldon was still in his makeup off stage. He was watching it. And after it was over, Ron Penfound walked into the control room, and Lynn said, hey, kid, you did a good job out there. I'm going to tell you something, though. My dad was a train man. There's porters, there's brakemen, there's engineers. There's no captains. He said, Captain Penny put a cigarette in his mouth, lit it, and he said, who cares? This thing's off the air in 6 weeks. 17 years later, guess who was still on the air?
That's right. And, of course, his favorite thing about, you can fool some of the people
some of the time and some of the people all the time. Oddly enough, that came from two different sources. The first part, you can fool some of the people some of the time, came from Abraham Lincoln. You'll never guess where the second part came from. You can't fool Mom?
I have no idea.
The Little Rascals. Spanky said that. You can't fool Mom at the end of one of the episodes.
Wow.
She's pretty nice and she's pretty smart. That was Ron Penfound.
You know, the other thing that we also enjoy, not only the kids' shows, but sort of those late night shows and the horror hosts.
Oh, man, you're telling me.
We must have been like a manufacturing of those, because there's so many of them.
You know, it's funny, because they have huge conventions across the country, and one of the biggest is called Chiller Theater in Parsippany, New Jersey. And, I mean, they had Zachary Lee and all those sort of people, but Los Angeles, New York, they'll all say, Cleveland had the best ones, no question, and Goulardi was the king of them all. Ernie Anderson did not want anybody to know that he was making an extra $50 a week to do the show, because he had a voiceover career. So he put on this phony beard and a fright wig, and in the very first episodes, he had sort of like this European accent. Finally, just said, this is stupid. I'm not doing that. He became so popular because he was a TV anarchist, quite honestly. They told him not to do something. He did it. If you didn't want him to do something, you would tell him to do it. So at any rate, when he was on the air in 1963, and keep this in mind, he was only on the air here for about 1,000 days. He left in January 67. At any rate, the crime rate would go down 50% because the victims and the criminals would stay home to watch him. That's how powerful. At one time, he was on 6 days a week.
Now, I was a youngster. I was born in 61, so I have a little. And also, I should, a disclaimer, I was born in Parma.
Oh, there you go.
So my White Sox and I traveled to our new school system in Westlake, Ohio, and I,
that would be Obaday,
right. There you go.
It followed me wherever I went. After a while, it became sort of a badge of honor, in a sense. But was he was on the afternoon or in the evening or both?
Both, actually, because he was on in the evening. On Friday nights, and I mean, he just destroyed the competition. And they thought, well, you know what? Let's put him on for a Saturday afternoon show. And then it became a Monday through Friday show called Laurel, Gulardi, and Hardy. And he would show Laurel and Hardy flicks for about a half an hour.
But the nighttime show, I can't remember exactly how this went, but at some point he kind of turned into a different character during the nighttime show.
Gulardi?
Yeah.
Well, he became more of a satirist, I guess you could say. Instead of doing shtick, he would do satire, heavy satire. And some of the people he did it with, like Chuck Schadowski and Tim Conway, are still around. And they'll tell you, there was nobody like this guy. But here's the thing about Ernie. There used to be a place on Euclid Avenue called Seagram's. He never thought Gulardi was funny. He just thought, well, I'll just do this for the extra money every week. Well, it turned into a lot of extra money every week with all the marketing and appearances. At any rate, Ernie used to go next door to the Seagram's, the bar next door, and they'd have a martini with him, and there was nobody in the bar. Nobody knew he was there. They'd swamp the place if they did. But they'd have the TV on Channel 8. He'd play dominoes with the owner, drink martinis. When he saw they were going to a spot, he'd run next door, do some improv, and then come back. He'd have a fresh martini, and they'd keep playing dominoes. The thing about Ernie, I think that a lot of people have to understand, is when we say he was an anarchist, he took it to the nth degree. I went to his house to do what sadly was the final interview with him, and he was dying at that point. In fact, if you ever saw the movie Magnolia, that's what he looked like. His son based that on Jason Robards' character on him. At any rate, I walked into the living room, and there's a beautifully framed piece, and it was a memo from Channel 8. And it was 1963, and it says, "To staff from Norman Wagee," who was the general manager, "there will be no motorcycle riding in my office." And so, what was this all about? Turns out he said he got upset with something that Ernie did. So Ernie, that Monday, he wanted him in his office. He rode his motorcycle through the hallways into his office. You can imagine the fumes. He said, "You wanted to see me?" And that was it. So you didn't tell Ernie Anderson what to do. You know, as a matter of fact, he didn't even care about politicians. There were always long lines whenever the Gulardi All-Stars played. And he played as Ernie Anderson, but they all knew it was Gulardi. So in Parma, one day he played a game, and there was a huge line, like, oh, the length of the field to get his autograph, which, by the way, he signed Gulardi, not with an H. That was because he found out the store had trademarked his name, and he said, well, they're not going to trademark that. He would only write Goul. If you got a Gho, you don't have a real one.
Wow.
Anyway, he's signing autographs, and the mayor comes up, Mayor Day, and he says, "Hi, Gulardi, this is my son." He says, "Hi, Mayor Day. Hi, son. That's the end of the line down there." And they looked at him with his mouth open. He said, "I'm just kidding." But still, he didn't care. You know, that could have been really embarrassing.
The book is called Cleveland TV Tales. We're talking to Mike Oshesky about this. He and his wife Janice have put this together. It's amazing how much we remember about so many of these different programs. I wonder, though, as an adult, if we were to see them again, would they turn sour? Would they make us think, I can't believe I actually like this? Or is it sort of a time and a place and you really can't kind of transition?
Well, you know,
that's
the thing. It's time and place. Keep this in mind. Why do we keep these people so dear to us? Well, number one, even if you look at the network stuff that came over through the mid-70s, the special effects were almost non-existent. I mean, you've got more out of a $150 digital camera you can buy now than they had in those big cameras they had back up to the mid-70s. But because they didn't have all those special effects, these people had to depend on their talent. And that's what made them so memorable. You look at guys like Lynn Sheldon, who I always thought was our version of Dick Van Dyke. That guy can make you laugh and cry and laugh again within 5 minutes. And, I mean, it was those kind of guys that were so creative that they were forced to be creative. If they weren't creative, they weren't on the show and they weren't on TV. That's what made it so special. You know, another thing about Lynn Sheldon, we talk about life lessons, and certainly Ron Penfound used to give those to kids, and everybody did, Miss Barbara, even Woodrow the Woodsman. However, Lynn Sheldon, there was one day when he got on the air, it was a beautiful summer day, and he said, "Hey, you know, kids, it's a nice day out there. Why aren't you out there playing? Maybe go outside. Read a book. He said, Barnaby's going to be here when it's raining, but don't worry, I'll be here. Why don't you go out and enjoy yourself out there? Well, needless to say, the sponsors weren't too crazy about that, but hey, you know, what were you going to do? Say, no, you can't do that? Because he would have just said, sorry, that's not me.
Well, you talk about sponsors, and that's really, I mean, that's sort of what most of this was about, and many times it's the sponsor-driven programs. Any programs you come to mind that really wouldn't have existed if somebody, a sponsor, hadn't said, hey, I want a show that'll feature my product and put it on at this station at this time?
I'll tell you what, national sponsors learned a lot from Cleveland. Here's how. McDonald's, and there's a book called Under the Arches, which is an excellent book. And back in the early 60s, McDonald's was not doing very well at all. There were only 6 restaurants in the greater Cleveland area. Well, they decided, the Northeast Ohio McDonald's group thought, we should advertise on TV. Let's see if that'll work. So they targeted kid shows. And who did they get? Well, Barnaby. They put, I forget the exact amount of their advertising budget for the year into the Barnaby show. The spot aired on Thursday. On Friday, they ran out of food. And they were so happy, they actually put out a special promotional picture. And if you've got one of these now, look for them on eBay because they're very expensive. They put out a special promotional picture with Franz the Toymaker, Barnaby, Captain Penny, and Woodrow all standing together and singing. Well, those go for big money now. The thing is, they were so happy with Lynn that they said, we'd like to give you a McDonald's restaurant. And he says, I don't know anything about restaurants. Forget it. Years later, he says, you know, I really should have learned how to make a hamburger.
Yeah.
At any rate, the funny thing is also about that is that they gave each of the guys in the picture a lifetime card where they could get free food for them and their families. Well, needless to say, they took advantage of it. Franz the Toymaker had a van, and he used to get all the neighborhood kids to go up to McDonald's. And they actually took his away. So
that sounds just a tad creepy. Hey, the weekend's coming up, and when I think about, I think it was on Saturdays, might have been on Sundays, but I always think about like how great it felt when I heard the beginning of the Gene Carroll show.
Oh, Gene, yeah. And you know, Gene was around for a long time too. I mean, he was around in the 1930s. He was a radio star with a guy named Glenn Roll. So fortunate to know Candy Lee Korn. Candy Lee is a grandmother now. She's in her late 60s, but the funny thing was, when she was 5 years old, she was Gene Carroll's co-host on Uncle Jake's Funhouse. It was Uncle Jake and Candy, and they had a bunch of kids, and they sold Bosco and things like that. And by the way, they sold a lot of Bosco. They moved a lot of bottles. At any rate, Gene was so loved by the families that he later went on to the Giant Tiger Amateur Show. And that later became the Gene Carroll Show. But you know what? What was a Sunday with polka varieties and the Gene Carroll Show? Even if you weren't Polish and and didn't care, you know, about the accordion players every week.
That's the first place I ever heard that song, Those Were the Days, My Friend.
Oh, is that right?
Sometimes I, you know, before you hear, you see thinking, is that the guy who sings it? Because you hear they would, you know, sort of bring some of the songs of the day or on the air and being able to do that. Of course, we also exercise with Paige Palmer.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, Paige Palmer. She was something. You know, she was one of those really special people. Actually, her show and Romper Room were canceled for the morning exchange. But she was one of the pioneers, and she was actually there, you know, exercising, and she was marketing herself as well. You can get the exercise equipment, things like that. But she also showed fashion and things like this. A lot of people don't realize Paige came from a very poor background. As elegant and sophisticated as she became, she struggled very early in the Akron area when she was growing up. But Paige Palmer was one of those characters that, wow, you don't forget her, put it that way. And she lived a long life, too. The funny thing was, we contacted her years ago when the RTA was opening up its brand new downtown hub, and they had some old cars there, and they wanted to bring back people from the 60s. So we contacted Paige, and she was hesitant. She said, nobody cares. Come on, who cares? Come on, Paige, come on out and sign some autographs. She shows up in these beautiful fur coats and everything like that, fur coat. She went downstairs. Mind you, this was downstairs in November. You know how cold it can get down there on that landing spot there for the depot. At any rate, she was supposed to be there 2 hours. We had a limo for her, too. It went on for at least 3.5 hours, and she said, I'm not leaving until I talk to all these people. Well, you had to pay extra for the limo. Guess what? It was worth every penny of it. She was an amazing woman.
And half of the households in Cleveland have that bar with the little red balls at the end of it.
Right. Use the bounce on that. She had these elastic bands that I think a lot of kids turned into, like, pumpkin slingshots or something.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
They're always good for getting into, you know, hanging out and trying to do. Of course, it did. It was the early days of that sort of, you know, physical fitness that Jack LaLanne at the time, also on the national level, was doing that sort of thing. How did Miss Barbara know I was staying home sick that day? How did she know I was the one there?
It was the magic mirror. The magic mirror knew all. Come on now.
That's amazing. Wow. Now, I should also mention that you're going to debut this book at Goulardi Fest, which is this weekend.
Yeah, what a weekend we have ahead. Goulardi Fest, it's October 31st. Tomorrow, it goes from 5 to 9. Saturday, from 10 to 7. On Sunday, from 11 to 5. Lots of great guests. We got Dee Wallace coming out. She was the mother in E.T., Arch Hall and the Archers. Arch Hall was in a bunch of B-movies, of fabulous B-movies. But guess what? He's an amazing guitarist, and he's going to be accompanied by the Son of Ghoul on bass. Tim Conway sadly had to cancel, and for the craziest reason. He called us up, and he said, listen, his wife's name is Sharky, by the way, Charlotte, but they call her Sharky. She came down with the flu, and he says, it wasn't that bad of a flu, but here's the thing. You don't get on a plane nowadays with the flu. And as he put it, he says, I'd come out there, but we'd have to postpone it for 21 days.
Yes.
So he said he promises he's going to be there next year. But still, what an amazing show. Dick Goddard comes out every year for us. Chuck, John, Houlihan comes back. And, you know, here's another thing about Houlihan. About 3 or 4 years ago, the guy had open-heart surgery. And they said, you're off your feet for 6 months. 6 weeks later, he was at Goulardi Fest. So it's at the LaVilla Party Center, by the way. It's over on Brook Park Road, really close to all the freeways. Come on out. Last year was an amazing time because, I mean, it looked like Woodstock. So many people came out.
Everybody with the memories, and this is what you've kind of put into this book. It's called Cleveland TV Tales. Our guest today was Michael. Oh, you have one more thing?
No, I just want to mention we do have a link to that on our Facebook page.
Terrific.
So if you go to our Facebook page, you can click on the Goulardi Fest link in case you want to get the exact address and the hours and what's going on each day.
Right. Gray and Company Publishing, putting in a lot of great books. Monday Times, there's a lot about our sports history, dealing with the Browns, Cavs, Indians, that sort of things. But it's always good to look at those great memories from TV. And on the cover there is smiling Dorothy Fuldheim as well, and Barnaby, so people obviously familiar with it. And sometimes it's hard to try to explain to my kids, my daughter, a little bit about some of this because you wonder what is the TV history that they are taking with them. But I guess everybody finds their own level of what it is that
Phineas and Ferb. There you go.
Exactly. But our guest today, Michael Shevsky. Mike, thanks for sharing the time. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Thanks for the book.